this episode of GeoTalk, we ask whether Groundspeaker's turned its back on the geocaching community, we explore some of the features in GSAC version 8, and we announce the winners of the geostuff.com.au competition. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 80 of GeoTalk for November 2011. I'm your host, Spin Doc Bob from the Spin Doctors, also known as Darren. Welcome to the podcast if this is your first time. And don't forget, we've got a website for the podcast at geotalkpodcast.com. And we also have a feedback line. If you ever want to give in some feedback, give us a call. You'll hear a few later on in this episode. Don't forget our phone number, 02-800-50-436. So that's 02 for Sydney, 800-50-436. Well, there's only a couple of weeks left in the year, and I don't know about how your geocaching resolution has gone, because if you haven't completed it yet, you haven't got much time to do it. But I'm happy to say that a few weeks ago, I ticked off both of my geocaching resolutions for 2011. And the first one was completing the 7 geocaches in Australia that were planted in the year 2000 that still exist today. And I've coined a phrase, I like to call them the Y2caches. So my last one I needed to find was one called Frying Pan, which was up in Chichester Forest in the upper parts or the northern part of the Hunter Valley, over in near Dungog. And thanks very much to Damo, who happened to come and join me for the ride, even though he'd been before. And it was a bit of a hike up there, but we found it, one of the classic caches from year 2000. And that means I found all 7. Now, I then decided to, using GSAC and a few pocket queries, decided to find out who else has done it. And to my surprise, no one else has. So there you go. I have accomplished a first for once. I may not be the biggest finder, I may not be the fastest finder, or have the most FTFs, but I am currently the only person in Australia to have found all 7 Y2 caches. So there you go. There's a challenge for anyone else who's out there. See if you can equal me to the task. The other caching resolution was to complete my caching calendar. Now, I know a lot of people have been trying to do this, and some won't be able to do it until the 29th of February because they've missed the leap day in previous years, and the next one is next year. I was fortunate. I'd already done that, and I only had 2 days left after having a go in 2010 and failing by 2 days. Well, my last one was October 20, and I'm pleased to say that I've found a cache on that day. So now I've completed that challenge. I've got a cache on every day of the calendar year. I'll have to see if I can come up with another one for next year. And already I'm starting to think maybe something I might set myself for next year is to find all the 2001 caches. Now, it's a bit of a task to do it in Australia because there were quite a few planted in 2001, so I'm limiting the task to New South Wales, my home state. So I'm going to see next year if I can complete all of the 2001 geocaches. There's, well, I may not mention it yet because I might make it the trivia question, but so far I'm about a third of the way there. Also, what I want to complete next year is the Y2 caches of New Zealand. You might have heard in a previous episode that I found Auckland's oldest and Wellington's oldest. Well, that just leaves me with a couple left to get down in Dunedin. And it just so happens that Dunedin is going to be home for the mega event down in New Zealand. And if you haven't already, go to gps.org.nz. That's gps.org.nz. And you can click on the tab there to find out about the mega event. All the details are online now, including a registration form, so you can register for that mega event. And also, don't forget, there's the Albury mega event that's occurring in the Easter weekend of April next year, and you can check that out at online. I'll give you a link in the show notes from the podcast, geotalkpodcast.com. Now, people who know me well will know that I like to, I like the diversity that exists in geocaching, and I don't want to favour any one particular website or any one particular product and so forth. And so recently I've been trying to get my head around open caching. It's been around for about a year now, And I've noticed that although there are open caches around different parts of Australia, in Sydney there was only one, and that happens to be a dual listing with a cache that's already listed on Groundspeak. So out of interest, I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just hide a couple of myself. So I have recently hidden two open caches in Sydney. So if you're in Sydney and you're looking for a cache that's a little bit different, it's not, I mean, when I say it's different, it's no different to your ordinary sort of Groundspeak or GCA cache. It just happens to be listed on Open Caching, but I've already had one found. One has been claimed. The other one was only put out about a week ago. But to try and entice people to find them, I've also put Munzees in them. So obviously the first one, the bait was taken. Someone went to find the Munzee and found the Open Cache and so claimed it. Be interested to see if they do it with the second one. And that brings me to Munzees, because you may have recalled from last episode, Alan over in New Zealand was talking about some of the failings of Munzees, and I've given it a bit more of a go in the last few weeks, and I'm finding exactly the same frustration that Alan has found. And I really can't see this concept taking off until they fix a few fundamental problems. Now, the two that I see, the two problems, one of them is at the end of the website and the other one is the users. The one at the website is they really need an offline capability. They need some way in which you can save the locations and maybe some script of some sort or some code that stays in your phone so that you can find the Munzee without having to be in a mobile range. Now, I was looking for a couple in Glenmore Park. Those who are in Sydney will know that it's a suburb of Penrith. It's nowhere, you know, it might be on the outer edges of Sydney, but it is no, you know, not in the bush or anything like that. The mobile reception was very patchy, and it was only 2G in most parts. And unfortunately, I just could not connect with the servers. That was one problem. So they really need an offline capability. The second problem I had was that the Munzees aren't being placed in using either durable materials or placed in a way that is going to encourage longevity. And of the four that I went looking for in an hour, one of them had faded due to sun after only 1 week, and the other three had been removed because they were stickers placed in plain view on bus shelters, and obviously locals decided that, you know, what was the point of those, and they ripped them off, or it could have even been the council. So, you know, my impression of Munzee so far hasn't been too good. Hopefully, you know, things will evolve and they will change, because I think it's a good idea, but at the moment I just can't see it taking off. Now, I mentioned in the intro about whether Groundspeak has turned its back on the geocaching community. Been a lot of chatter in forums, both in the GCA and also in the Groundspeak one, although it's been a little bit limited, about the recent removal of feedback from the Groundspeak website. Now, you may have recalled over the last year or two, down on the left-hand side of the screen, there's always been a feedback tab on the geocaching.com website. Well, a few weeks ago, that was removed. Now, I'll give you a link in the show notes to the notice that was put up by Groundspeak as to why it was being removed. Their main issue with it was that it was just becoming too much work. Now, if you're not familiar with what it was, the feedback section allowed geocachers to put up ideas or proposals, to lobby for different features to be added or removed or changed on the Groundspeak website, and then users, premium members, got to vote on them. And I think from memory you had about 20 votes and you could use up to 3 for each one. So I did a couple, being an Android user. You know, I helped lobby, you know, helped lobby. I voted for the application to be modified and changed and so forth to make it better work on the Android system. And that certainly happened, and we're very happy for that. But unfortunately, you know, Groundspeak have decided that the amount of feedback that they were getting was just too big for them to monitor and to keep up with, and therefore they've removed it. Now, it does raise an interesting question. Is that really the excuse, or is it because they didn't want the they weren't getting the feedback that they wanted to hear? A lot of debate about it in the forums. Some people are saying that obviously they just didn't get what they wanted to hear, and therefore turned away from it. Others are saying it was controlled by trolls, people who were deliberately trying to vote down ideas and to always badmouth Groundspeak. It's a very sticky situation, and I think it's one that people will chat about for a while. But obviously Groundspeak have decided now that they've got enough ideas to go off with and that they'll use the forums to monitor how things are going in the future. I'll be interested to hear in your thoughts about what you think about Groundspeak removing the feedback section from their website. So give us a call or drop us an email at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. One final news item that I wanted to discuss was an app that is on the Android system that I've been meaning to write a review for the last week or two now, and that is Neon Geo. If you use an Android smartphone, I can highly recommend this app. It's one of the apps that uses the Geocaching Live API, and it's much cheaper. It's less than half the cost of Groundspeak's app. It's fantastic. It's Neon Geo. Hook straight into the API, and I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are using the CGeo app, which is a fairly good app in itself, and it's a free app, but this one is much quicker, and the features in it continue to grow, and hopefully in the next week or two I'll get my review written up and posted online, and I'll give a link to that, but check that one out if you've got an Android phone. Well, it's time now to announce the winner of the geostuff.com.au competition, and a big thanks to the team there at geostuff.com.au, and in particular to Carl Jones, who runs the store there, and for donating the prizes. Now, the competition, we gave you a couple of clues to have a guess at who the mystery geocacher was. We don't know if he is a geocacher or not, may not be because he's pretty busy most of the time, but the answer to it was Bill Hunter. So all those clues led to Bill Hunter. And first prize, the winner of the Magellan Explorers GC is Griffo, Paul Griffin. Congratulations on you've been drawn out of the hat as one of the correct entries. And second prize, the one-year membership to Groundspeak goes to Juraxi, and that's Andrew. I don't have your surname, Andrew, but congratulations on that. Get in touch with us in the next few weeks. Drop us an email and we'll arrange for those prizes to be sent out to you. So thanks once again to Carl for contributing the prizes to that. And don't forget, in the lead up to Christmas, geostuff.com.au, check them out and stuff your Christmas stocking full of geocaching goodies. Well, that's enough of me for now. Let's cross to New Zealand and get an update from Alan, Radio Nut 50.
Yeah, hi there everyone from Hamilton, New Zealand, with some caching comment from this side of the Tasman Sea. Well, for a start, I want to chat about GSAK, or GSAC as some people call it. As a regular user of this marvellous caching support database, I recently got a notification of a new version coming out. Now, this is a step release up to release 8 and requires a payment, but you can keep using it just with a nag screen without paying. This new version's got a number of changes though. The most interesting one for me is using the new API link with geocaching.com. At last, you can set up an immediate update of all caches in your area while you watch. No more setting up queries on geocaching.com, then waiting for processor time, downloading them, importing them. Now, you can just bring up a menu, enter a center point, click go. You can put a few filters in if you like on the way, and it all happens in front of your eyes. It's marvelous. You have to have a premium paid up membership of geocaching.com for it to be very useful, but once you've done that, you can get up to 6,000 caches per day. And I've had a pretty good play with it. Although it was a little while before I realised that geocaching.com has actually limited the maximum radius to 50 kilometres at this stage. That's a little bit limiting at times. There's another new feature that I found useful, and that's called Get Status, and it's in the same area on the new menus. Many users will have, like me, been a little frustrated in the past with the lack of ability to immediately flag archived geocaches in your database. When a cache is archived on geocaching.com, all that happens is it stops coming in your queries. So the only way to know whether the caches in your database are not there at all is just to notice they've stopped being updated by repeating your pocket queries. You then can run a macro that marks anything that's not updated in the past X number of weeks is archived, assuming that that's the only reason you haven't got them, but that's a little bit clunky. Well, now there's a command that allows you to get GSAK to run through all your database of caches, or a particular filter if you'd like to do a subset, and check them one by one against geocaching.com and update the status so it shows archived, disabled, enabled, etc. Well done, Clive, the author of this fantastic program. I'll enjoy wandering through the other features next. Butterfly Lady and I headed off to our hometown of Blenheim in the South Island for a long weekend last month to attend a family birthday and grab a few caches down there, of course. Well, one of those caches is stuck in my mind. This hide took us to a beach called Blind River, south of Blenheim, and the cache notes told us to look for a building that was an old cable station. Now, when we lived in that area, I used to work for the telecommunications industry, and I knew that Blind River was the south terminus of the original telephony phone cable from the North Island to the South Island, so this piqued my interest a fair bit. But as a bit of a follower of industrial artefacts, I was simply gobsmacked to see, near the car park, in this lonely spot far from any tourist, was what could be mistaken for a wire rope emerging from the dunes and heading across the beach to the sea. But this was the actual cable, that single telephone cable that connected the two halves of our country from 1926 until the 40s or the 50s. It was still there, being exposed by the movement of the sea. This was a major technology point of the day. There were earlier cables, of course, across the Cook Strait. They came in north of this location, but they were telegraph cables, Morse code. This one people could actually talk on. Many today could see this as some old junk, but to me this is one of those magic locations that our fascinating hobby takes us to, far from the beaten track, where cache layers know of something interesting and hide a stash to get us to share the view. Thanks to these caches, who go by the name of Bum and Worker, who laid this one, now I've seen something of our country's important history that would never have sighted without this hobby. On a recent weekend, I went caching with the caching family called the Geocoolies, and this includes my grandson, who's 4-year-old, Nate. This trip, seeking a recently laid cache called Pukimokimoki, up a hill near Hamilton in a bush reserve, brought me to see what can be the real view of our hobby for children. If you, like Linda and I, are getting up there in years and have seen quite a large number of caches, you may have almost stopped completely swapping treasures like us, then I'd recommend going out with some young children. It's really fun to see the enthusiasm of the hunt, the sheer delight of finding a cache, the special enjoyment of a big box, and the fun of going through the stash and this protracted dithering of making a swap. So if you really want to enjoy the hobby, take a small child along with you. It's kind of fun. So to end today's item with the coming of the Christmas season, how about a quick roundup of events in our country? I see on the listing we have Big Games in Russell, listed on the 3rd of December. We've got Boxall's Christmas Bun Fight in Wellington on the 18th of December. There's the 12 Days of Christmas, and that's at our home here in Hamilton also on the 18th of December. And Tramper Ted's Christmas Conclusion is on the 26th of December. Right now there's nothing showing up in December yet for the South Island, but it's worth keeping an eye out for that as well. So do enjoy the summer weather and get out there caching, folks. Look forward to catching you again next month. Cheers from New Zealand.
Well, thanks for that update, Alan, and thank you also for the review there of GSAC version 8. I've come across it in the last few weeks as well, and I must say that link using the API to Groundspeak is a real revelation. It's a real revolution, I should say, in being able to use that tool. And I also recommend, as you do there, about caching with kids. Zach is now almost 4, and he loves treasure hunting, and he doesn't mind the micros, although I try to stay away from them. But he certainly has a lot of fun pulling out some of those big geocaches from their hiding spots. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question, and in this particular episode, the question's going to be, how many Year 2001 caches still exist in each state and the North and South Island of New Zealand? So how many Year 2001 caches exist in each state of Australia and New Zealand? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Well, it's time now to have a quick look at some of the events that are occurring in December around the country. And there's quite a few occurring on the first weekend of December. On the 4th is the Geocaching New South Wales Christmas Party that's being held in the southeastern suburbs of Sydney. There's a Barefoot Christmas Party being held in Brisbane. Ho, 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 there's a Christmas event, Let's Go, that's over in Adelaide in South Australia. And also on the 4th of December is the Riverina Geocaching Christmas event being held in Wagga Wagga. On the 6th of December is the Caching Corner Capers, that's in Rouse Hill up in the northwestern suburbs of Sydney. And also on the 6th of December is a Christmas pub dinner being held in Adelaide. So that's some of the events that are occurring around the country. Don't forget, you can also head to Geocaching Australia's website, head to their dashboard, and you can keep up to date with the events that are occurring or being listed around the country. I'll give you a link to that in the show notes. Well, it's time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and there's just the one email in for this episode, and that's from Ian, known as Riddle. I presume he's probably from around the Riddle Creek area near where I grew up in northwestern Melbourne. He says, there's recently been a sudden burst of activity from a group known as Team Woodlands over in the northern parts of Melbourne. He says they've just hidden a series of caches consisting of 100 caches spaced 150 to 200 metres apart around the perimeter of a park and trails that's located close to Tullamarine Airport, which is Melbourne's main airport. The final cache, which is GC35E2X, so that's GC35E2X, contains the bulk of the information you need to find the other 99 caches, including maps and a checklist. He says they've all been professionally done and they're all published on the same day, the 27th of October, which obviously sent a lot of people crazy when they got about 100 emails dropping into their inbox to tell them that new caches have been planted. Naturally, Ian says he had to go after work and find as many as he could, and he managed to get 20 FTFs in the space of 2 hours before a phone call from Mrs. Riddle decided to remind him that he should have been attending a meeting and not out geocaching. He returned again the following Friday night after work on the way home, but rain and thunderstorms curtailed the activity and only limited him to 7 caches. Anyway, he says it's a good-looking series, and it's sure to stir up the Melbourne caching community a bit and keep on caching. So if you're heading down to the northwestern reaches of Melbourne, you might want to check that out if you wanted to get a couple of quick numbers. We've got a couple of calls on the GeoTalk hotline, 02800 5436, and the first one is from Justin. Growing up is optional. He's caching around in Parramatta.
Good evening, it's Justin here from Team Growing Up is Optional. I'm in Parramatta for work, and I just happened to turn on the GPS and look for the closest geocaching is 1,300 metres from me, and it's called Bocce Anyone Gorilla Gardeners by the Spin Doctors. So that was an absolute must-do. I've come around here, I've managed to find the cache, and I think I'll go back home, go back to the hotel to sleep. So thanks for placing that cache. It was very interesting. I like the Gorilla Garden there that didn't get on the TV, but broke up an otherwise boring night. All right, thank you very much. See ya.
Well, thanks for that call, Justin. And we've got another call from Darth Trader up in the Hunter Valley with a milestone.
G'day, GeoTalk. It's Darth Trader calling in. Just sitting down in a bit of a sweat. We just walked around Sugarloaf Mountain looking for a cache called Halfway Up a Mountain by Big Mountain Shell. We've just done another one of their caches nearby called The Gambler, which is highly recommended. And can't tell you any more about that, but this is Darth Trader saying it's a good cache. So it's a good cache. Just in enjoying the view here. We're looking over the Hunter Valley. Nice warm day. But wanted to call in a milestone as well. It was caching with Affinitas down in, what's the name of that place? Kangaroo Valley. We took kayaks, borrowed, begged and stole to get kayaks, and we paddled over 3 days. We paddled 52 kilometres. I did a terrain 5 cache down there for me, 500 cache, which was paddler's rest. And we had a very nice time fishing for bass. There's no motor craft allowed around there. It's all just paddle craft. And we just took the GPS and a tent and supplies enough for a few nights. And it was good. It was beautiful. I plan to do it again next year. It was that good. So really recommend anyone goes down there. And also to do the Fitzroy Falls virtual cache. We just drove past thinking not much of it. And when we actually stopped to do this virtual cache, we went and looked at the waterfall and we were quite blown away by it. So I can't remember who set that one up, but we appreciated that one too. Anyway, we've got to trudge back up the mountain because we've come halfway down it, and we'll be sweating again by the time we get back to the car. Okay, do that all. Signing out.
Well, thanks, guys, for those calls. And don't forget, if you want to call in and have your say on the podcast, just give a call on 02-800-50-436, or you can drop us an email to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. And talking about Darth Trader, I recently found one of his caches actually on part of my trip to find Frying Pan, that last one of the Y2 caches that I mentioned at the start of the program. I've recently looked for his Crucible cache. Now, Damo, who I was with, had actually pointed it out, and given that I'd seen the spoiler video, which I think we mentioned a couple of episodes back, I decided to stand back and let Damo do most of the work. And even watching, I can say it is a fantastic cache. So if you're ever in the Newcastle region, in the Hunter Valley, check out Crucible, Q-R-U-C-I-B-L-E, or just look up for Darth Trader and you'll find it in his placed caches. It's certainly a fantastic cache to do, and one that I thoroughly recommend. That's all for this episode of GeoTalk, but before we go, we better give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question, and that is, how many year 2001 caches are there still existing in each state of Australia and New Zealand? Now, we'll work up the board, we'll work backwards. In Northern Territory, there is one cache. There are four in the state of Tasmania, six in Queensland. In South Island of New Zealand, there are 18. In WA, there are 19. In Victoria, there are 21. In the North Island of New Zealand, there are 24. In New South Wales, there are 40. And the state with the most year 2001 caches still around is South Australia with 47. So that's the answer to that. And it might be a goal that you might want to set, particularly maybe in some of those with smaller numbers. It'd be an easy one to do in Northern Territory anyway. Well, before I go, I'm going to leave you with a bit of audio from a very strange geocaching podcast video that went up on YouTube in the last couple of days. I'll let play a bit of it and give you a link in the show notes to check it out. See if you can make anything out of it. Until next time, safe geocaching.
What is this? There's some kind of black goo here. It's like ooze. What is that? Look what I'm wearing. I've been wearing this for like 18 years.
Yeah, well, I don't have any clothes, so I could use some clothes too.
Yeah, you look kind of transparent. You ought to get something to eat.